This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always in the early portion of the week by Adam Burke. Adam, an eventful weekend, some interesting results, needless to say. We'll dive into some of those, but the big college football news coming out on Sunday as another highly paid blue blood program fired their coach. The highly paid part, Brian Kelly, the blue blood, LSU. And now, in a year ago, when you saw the coaching circle be pretty minimal, now you've got LSU, you've got Penn State. It feels like it was 4 years ago when LSU was looking for Brian Kelly to be come on down, and kind of made shockwaves there. What does this do, in your opinion, to LSU moving forward the rest of the year? They've got a bye week. They have Alabama coming up after that. And, you know, how stunning is it to see Brian Kelly out not even four full years into a tenure at LSU?
Well, I think based on the way that things have gone down in Baton Rouge, it's really not that stunning at all. I mean, you know, this was supposed to be a really, really good offense. This was supposed to be Garrett Nussmeier's chance at winning a Heisman Trophy, and LSU's just not any good. And I mean, you know, I think that I've always kind of operated under the assumption that, like, the, you know, culture fit has to be a culture fit thing. I've always felt like that's kind of overblown, kind of overrated a little bit. Maybe not. The Brian Kelly was disingenuous from the jump at LSU. And certainly there were things in his past at Notre Dame that he probably should have been more accountable for and wasn't. Look, I mean, this team probably, if you want to be honest, they probably play better under Frank Wilson going forward than they did against, or than they did under Brian Kelly. So maybe this is a team that does kind of get that fired coach bounce, but it's inexcusable to be pedestrian with the recruiting pipeline that LSU has. And something else I was thinking about here today, you know, just in terms of some pretty marquee jobs being available now, the leash is definitely getting shorter for head coaches at these premier programs, because every year is kind of a one-year rebuild, and you have to have a program that's sustaining some level of success to be able to get your pick of the litter in free agency. And you can't afford to be an LSU or a Florida and get passed by, you know, schools like Vanderbilt, or, you know, having the gap widen with a Texas A&M or an Alabama or a Georgia, something like that, in the free agency era. So, you know, these coaches with these big buyouts, I mean, programs are just going to have to suck it up and deal with it.
Yeah, you look at the jobs that are already open. Wisconsin's not open yet. It was seems inevitable that will ultimately happen as Wisconsin. Hey, they scored a touchdown, though, Adam. So you got that going for them. Didn't get shut out. I think it was, what, 14 straight quarters without a touchdown or a point for Wisconsin. They get it in the slop out at Oregon. You know, I got a call from our buddy Jimmy Ott, radio host down at ESPN Baton Rouge earlier today. And you know, we were just talking, and it's surprising to me, taking a step back, that it was this big of a failure. You know, I do think Brian Kelly's a good coach. I don't know if he's a great coach. He might be. But you said the culture fit. And when this happened, I was confused. I'm like, I don't think this is going to work, because he's not a bulldog recruiter, but you've got all the resources in the world down there at LSU. And, you know, it's kind of what followed him from Notre Dame down to LSU oozed out, which is he's kind of got a little bit of the James Franklin. He wins the games he's supposed to win. He doesn't win the games he's not supposed to win. 5-11 against ranked teams at his tenure at LSU. And you know, you think back to the Jaden Daniels teams. I mean, that team was the most electric offense we had seen maybe since 2019 LSU, but their defense was an absolute train wreck. So yeah, this one to me, Adam, and I know we're a betting podcast and we don't really care about, you know, what job is better than the other, but you've got LSU, you've got Penn State, you've got Florida, three really good jobs. You know, two programs that have won national titles in this century, Penn State making it to the semifinals just a year ago. How would you rank those jobs right now moving forward if you were Lane Kiffin or John Summerall or one of these hot commodities that these schools are all going to try to go after?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what you're looking for, right? Because I can make a very, very strong case that Penn State is the best of those three jobs simply because your path to the college football playoff is going to be easier. You know, I mean, you've got, yeah, Indiana is really, really good right now. We'll see how sustainable that is. Ohio State's going to be good all the time. But, like, you can beat a Michigan. You can beat an Oregon. You can beat an Ohio State. You can beat an Indiana at Penn State. And you just have to basically win one or two of those four games and give yourself a shot at the college football playoff. Whereas in the SEC now, I mean, you've got Texas there. You know, you've got Texas and Oklahoma now, where Oklahoma's offense isn't great right now with John Mateer, but the defense has been playing well for the most part. Texas is always going to be a factor. And then, of course, you have all of the other teams that are a factor year in and year out. The Texas A&Ms of the world, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss is always going to be around there, at least while Kiffin is there, seemingly. So I think you can make a case, you know, if you want to win, if your goal is to win a national championship, that Penn State is the best out of those three jobs. But, you know, again, obviously being in Florida, you've got that super, super rich recruiting pipeline. Also, I think it helps going to Florida now that Florida State is kind of trending downward at this point in time. So you're not really fighting for as much in terms of getting those high school kids to commit. If you even want the high school kids to commit, you know, I mean, this is just a buyer economy now in college football. So I think you can make a strong case that Penn State is the best of those three jobs, probably Florida next and then LSU after that. But I don't know, man. I think the best job in the country right now is a fired college football coach, because these dudes are making a ton of money to do basically nothing.
It's pretty appealing, isn't it? James Franklin, Brian Kelly. I don't know what Brian Kelly will do next. I'd be curious if he'll want to coach. Kelly,
he doesn't get hired again, does he?
I don't.
Not in a premier program.
Well, and I'll say this. I actually think Brian Kelly, if he speaks his mind, I think he'd be really good on television. But he does have a lot of politician in him, you know, and it, sometimes you get these coaches, Adam, that because they want another job, don't really speak their minds. But if he kind of commits to the bit, I think he'd be really good in the media. So, yeah, curious to see what he's going to do. You know, I saw our colleague Ben Stevens put out a tremendous tweet of the surfer who was just speaking all Californian. And he's like, this is Brian Kelly preparing for his interview with UCLA, which I thought was a well done thing. People pointing out maybe he should go watch Task and get some insight on how to have a Philadelphia type of accent there and interviewing for Penn State. But yeah, we will see. 24-24 ATS during his tenure down there in the Bayou, and he is moving on, and so is LSU. Joe Sloan, by the way, also out as their offensive coordinator. When we look at Texas A&M, that second half was really impressive. Look, Adam, you know, we're pretty transparent here on the podcast. I liked LSU. I thought they would win this game. I thought this was going to be a desperation spot. I had my questions about Texas A&M. I knew they were good, obviously, but I thought this would just be a really, really hard spot for them to win this game. And they were trailing at the half, and then they completely dominated the second half. And that's a testament to Texas A&M, the talent that they have on their roster. I know that Mike Elko took a little bit of a jab at Brian Kelly, praising his strength coach. I believe it's It's not Tommy Mellott, but it's someone.
Moffitt.
Yes, Moffitt. Tommy Mellott, I believe, played at quarterback for Montana State or something like that. But what have you done with this Texas A&M team, Adam, in your power ratings from the start of the year to where they are now? And do you legitimately buy this team to be a national title contender? You can't even bet their odds to make the playoff anymore. They, along with Indiana and Ohio State, are off the board right now to make the college football playoff.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I've only upgraded Texas A&M 2 points from where I had them in week one. You know, this is a team, I think coming into every season, they're kind of difficult to gauge because it's Texas A&M. They always have a ton of talent. They always have talent on the defensive line. You know, it's really kind of, do they have the quarterback to sort of pull everything together? And, you know, the way that Marcel Reed is playing, the dual threat nature, he's taking pretty good care of the football. There's not a whole lot of negative plays with this Texas A&M offense. I mean, they've only given up 7 sacks on the season here so far. You know, Reed is a guy 5.5 yards per carry. He's able to keep you on schedule with down and distance, you know, have a pretty good success rate. Texas A&M really, really strong in the success rate department on offense here for this season. So, you know, they're just, they don't hurt themselves. You know, and I think a lot of that is a testament to Mike Elko and how good of a coach he's been, both as a coordinator and then as a head coach as well. So I've only moved them up 2 points. But, yeah, I mean, they get a Missouri team now that, you know, obviously Missouri's trajectory is a lot different. South Carolina's a mess. They need to fire Mike Shula like 3 weeks ago. And then the game on the road at Texas, I mean, does that game even necessarily matter? And if so, I mean, how does Arch Manning play in that game against the Texas A&M defense that has some holes? I mean, they've given up 40 twice this season here so far, but you know, this offense is just good. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. They're probably going to be a playoff team. They're probably going to play in the SEC championship game. And I'm curious what the long-ranging impact is of Mike Elko having this team play up to and or exceed expectations. You know, what does that mean from a coaching standpoint going forward with, you know, guys like the John Sumrals of the world? Does Ryan Silverfield leave Memphis? Does somebody able to pull Kenny Dillingham out of Tempe? You know, these guys that are just, you know, seemingly high energy, very positive types of guys that work really well with their staffs instead of having to be, you know, the big man on campus kind of thing. Elko's not a guy with a ton of fanfare, but here he is with a really, really good football team. So I'm kind of curious what this means long-term in terms of the coaching picture as well.
Yeah, I mean, what he did in just a couple of years at Duke prior to that was at A&M as their D coordinator. And the irony of this whole thing is the last two nails in the coffin, so to speak, for Brian Kelly were his former defensive coordinators beating him, right? Clark Lee beat him as he's the head coach of Vanderbilt. He was at Notre Dame prior to that. And then Mike Elko, you know, Mike Elko and Clark Lee were together at Wake Forest as a defensive coordinator linebacker tandem. They went together to Notre Dame in 2017 after the disastrous 2016 Notre Dame season. And now both are obviously flourishing in the SEC. You know, Vanderbilt does it again. You mentioned the Bo Prabula injury. Let's get to that here in just a moment. But Vandy, they're going to be a very trendy dog this weekend, and that is one of the more interesting games. It seems like, we'll see, but it looks like Matthew Caldwell, the Troy transfer, will probably be the starter for Texas, with Arch Manning getting concussed late in that comeback victory over Mississippi State. Man, somehow, some way, I think the win probability was like 1% or something insane like that, down 17 entering the fourth quarter, and they found a way to win in Stark Vegas. But one of the more intriguing games of this upcoming weekend is Vanderbilt and Texas. And Vanderbilt, they keep doing it, man. They keep finding ways to win. I thought that number might be a little bit inflated. I didn't touch it. And ultimately, Vandy finds a way. It wasn't pretty, but ultimately get the win over Missouri.
Yeah, I kind of hope it's Caldwell this week. I like Texas. I mean, you know, you look, this is... Vanderbilt's a really cool story, and Clark Lee is a great head coach. But Diego Pavia, for all the love that this dude gets, right, he's been held under 200 passing yards each of the last three games. And these are the three best teams that they've played. And honestly, even South Carolina held him to 177 passing yards. And the Gamecocks, that win is not aging well for Vanderbilt at all whatsoever. Tons of credit to them. This is cool. This is a great story. It's a very hard program to recruit for, especially in this conference, because of the academic requirements that are there in Nashville. But they're almost winning in spite of Pavia at this point, because he's really not playing very well. You know, 2-2 touchdown interception ratio in these last three games. Clearly LSU had issues. Maybe Missouri wins that game if Prabula doesn't get hurt. Maybe they don't. But I'm on Texas this week. I mean, I don't think Vanderbilt can keep doing this with Pavia really not playing at that impressive of a level. And I know you asked me last week about Pavia and the Heisman, you know, picture and the market and all of that. Like, this dude's numbers just aren't there. And they're not there against better SEC competition. And Texas, for all of their flaws on offense, they're still winning games. They're still getting market respect. That defense is really, really good. I'm on Texas this week. If you give me the chance... And I don't know where this number goes, you know, if it winds up being Caldwell. I think the way Arch Manning has played, to me, it doesn't really make much of a difference. But under 3, you know, 1.5 now, kind of the prevailing number, I'm taking Texas. And honestly, if Texas becomes a, you know, home dog, if Manning is ruled completely out, I think we're going to look back at this and say, yeah, we got this one wrong collectively as a betting market. I think Texas is the side 100% here.
Yeah, it does remind me a little bit of the Red River situation, where Oklahoma spent a good chunk of the week as the favorite. We didn't know about John Mateer. Then you get all this news, oh, John Mateer's going to play. And ultimately, Texas closed as around a three-point favorite in that game, and they win it going away. And I know there was a kickoff return. It was an ugly game, 23-6, the final score. But, you know, I think about it this way, and I know with the uncertainty of the quarterback position, and sometimes you do this kind of simple math equation. And for example, I did this on the tailgate show, Adam, on Saturday. Alabama was laying 11.5 against South Carolina. Oklahoma the week prior was laying 4.5. I was like, Alabama is not 7 points better than Oklahoma on a neutral. And lo and behold, South Carolina in a really good spot was able to get the cover and almost get the outright win. Are we really saying that Vanderbilt right now on a neutral is better than Texas? Some people might think that, but I do think that might be a little bit too far, in my opinion. So we'll see how this ultimately goes. And to be honest, if you're looking to bet Texas, and I'm kind of with you there, I don't think there's a real race to bet Texas here. I think Vanderbilt, because of the perception of Vandy and how well they've played, I think ultimately they're going to be a pretty public side here on Saturday there in Austin. So I don't know if there's a necessary race. So let me ask you this real quickly. So Vandy does have a loss. They're a 1.5-point dog this week to Texas. They wrap up the season against Tennessee. Vanderbilt right now is plus 125 to make the playoff, minus 150 to miss the playoff. What do they need to do in order to get into the playoff? Do they have to go 11-1? Can they lose one of these last four games? What do you think the situation is for Vanderbilt to make the playoff?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different things in play here, right? So first of all, there's going to be optics. You know, okay, their two best wins are LSU and Missouri, right? Well, Missouri's quarterback, you know, suffered a bad ankle injury in that game. And LSU just fired Brian Kelly, right? So those two, when you talk about the College Football Playoff Selection Committee and kind of the arbitrary nature of how they put this thing together, those are going to be two knocks against Vanderbilt. Also, they lost to Alabama on the road, you know, They don't have a quality road win, I guess you could say. South Carolina, maybe. But South Carolina, I guess, the Gamecocks aren't even going to make a bowl game, probably, at this point in time. So Vanderbilt's best wins are going to be teams that one fired their coach and one lost their quarterback. I think they have to beat Texas this week. If they go on the road and get a quality road win and beat Texas, this conversation becomes a whole lot different. I think they lose to both Texas and Tennessee. So I like minus 150 not to make the playoff. Again, remember, like, Nashville's a pretty decent-sized market, I guess. But, like, Vanderbilt in the College Football Playoff, like, is that going to really move the needle? Probably not. You know, this is going to be one of those things where, you know, last year they had a chance, right? They had a chance to put in some teams that probably wouldn't have made it otherwise. You know, like an SMU making it. Well, Dallas is one of the biggest markets in the nation, right? So you can kind of see that, you know, you can kind of see them sort of forcing their way in. I don't think we see Vanderbilt doing that unless they win maybe both of those games to Texas and Tennessee, because if they don't win both of them, they're probably not in the SEC championship game. So they don't have that opportunity to impress in that final weekend of the regular season. I think they got to win both of them. And if they do that and miss the SEC championship game, then I think they're in. I don't think they win both of them. So I like the minus 150 on the no there.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Alabama, you know, they avoided another DeBoer disaster. When you think about week one, 14-point favorites, lose to Florida State, win four straight games over ranked teams, I think the first time in SEC history, and then avoid it. And, as my buddies on the Solid Verbal podcast would say, win your clunkers. And they won their clunker. They found a way to get it done. And Jeremy Bernard said, you know, forget a game-winning field goal. I'm going to tiptoe the sideline here and take it into the end zone. So the SEC continues to be very fascinating how it all will play out. I tweeted it out, and a couple tweets came in saying, hold your horses. But Ole Miss winning on the road in Norman with their schedule, they could lose another game, Adam, and still get in. Ole Miss is making the playoff. And, you know, Lane being up for seemingly every job available, those schools might have to wait, because outside of two terrible losses, I don't really see how Ole Miss doesn't make the college football playoff. And I got to give them a ton of credit. The market thought they would lose that game. It went up to like 5.5 or 6 in favor of Oklahoma. That was a really damn impressive performance by Ole Miss to go on the road and to beat Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma offensively is nothing too great, but their defense is legit, Adam, and they put up over 300 yards passing on them. I was very impressed by that performance from Ole Miss, especially a week prior, kind of having their guts ripped out against Georgia in that game, 43-35.
So I was on Ole Miss in that game, and in the one against Oklahoma here. And I have questions about how good this Oklahoma defense actually is. You know, Brian Fromoe over at BCF Toys, you know, based on strength of opposing offenses, had Oklahoma 59th in the nation going into that game against Ole Miss. So they were playing basically a top 10 offense more or less for the first time, right? So I had a lot of questions about Oklahoma going into that game, specifically their defense. I mean, Auburn is not very good. Michigan, that was, you know, the first road start for Bryce Underwood, and they're able to run the football now. But at that time, Michigan was still trying to find their way on offense. They didn't really have a pretty significant identity. And then, like, Texas's offense isn't very good. And that was a game where Oklahoma just 23-6. Obviously, John Mateer coming off of injury, he wasn't playing well. Didn't play well against South Carolina. Didn't play well against Ole Miss. This defense got exposed. And quite frankly, I like Tennessee this week. I mean, I think this defense gets exposed again, actually playing against a really top-tier offense. And I like Alabama in 2 weeks because, again, they're playing a good offense with a really good quarterback. And so I think Oklahoma's going to, you know, lose their next two games here. I think that their defense is a little bit of a paper tiger. Again, the numbers were really good. The metrics were great, all of that. But they hadn't played a really good offense to this point. They played one, and it didn't go well for them. They'll play another one here this week. I don't expect it to go well for them. So it's really important at this time of the year to not just look at, you know, kind of the EPA metrics or the yards per play metrics without applying the proper context of who have they actually played. And we saw Oklahoma play a good offense and the defense faltered. And Mateer right now isn't good enough for them to overcome those things because he's still playing hurt. I mean, that thumb definitely seems to be an issue. He's still hesitant to run the football as much as he was earlier on or last year at Washington State. I really like Tennessee here this week. I think it's one of my, you know me, I typically like to look at the group of five conferences and all of that. I tend to stay away from the big boys. This is one of my favorite plays of the week here is Tennessee.
All right, we'll dive into a couple. You mentioned Paper Tiger. There are a couple teams that I think you and I have got some thoughts on who found ways to win over the weekend, but I do want to make mention here, some exciting news. Our friends Rainbow Authentics have been a sponsor of this podcast since we went out to Hawaii for the season opener. And that season opener, Adam, ended with a Tokyo To game-winning field goal, Kansai Matsuzawa. He's become kind of one of the cooler stories of the college football season because not only does he have a sweet nickname, the Tokyo To, but he taught himself how to play football off of YouTube clips, and now he might win the Lou Groza Award. He's 20 for 20, but we've got some official merchandise coming out soon. So stay tuned here for updates and release dates, but some exciting news out of Hawaii. There's a new line courtesy of Rainbow Authentics coming out. The Tokyo To line of apparel will be coming out soon. So make sure you keep our eyes peeled on that. And Hawaii, by the way, will be playing against San Jose State on Saturday night, so a good late night game. I got my late night shirt on, the Chase game shirt here. So that'll be the late night game in the Bay Area. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, what do you got here?
Before we go to break, I just want to say, I will be chasing with Hawaii in that game. I have the Rainbow Warriors a 1-point favorite in that one. This is a lot to me. Like obviously Colorado State is just really bad, and they fired Jay Norvell, but I just feel like Hawaii's games are mispriced when they come to the mainland. This is a really good football team. Mike Alejado, now that he got healthy, looks fantastic. Timmy Chang's doing a great job. San Jose State's a really one-dimensional team. Buddy, I don't know about you, but I'm on Hawaii this week plus the 2.5.
I already bet it. That shouldn't come as a surprise because I'm a homer now. We've already hit our win total. They're going bowling. Look, San Jose State, a team that I was high on preseason, Adam. I thought this would be a team that could make it to the Mountain West Championship, and they have definitely underachieved. But you're 100% right. There seems to be an extra tax on the travel for Hawaii. And, you know, we talked about it on the Thursday pod a couple of weeks ago. I didn't really understand the line. Hawaii was a 3-point dog against Colorado State. It just didn't make a ton of sense to me. They go out, they win that game. And yeah, you're right. Mike Alahata has been playing exceptionally well. He's healthy and his wide receiver core is healthy as well. This should be a fun one. You got the spread and shred offense led by Craig Stutzman, also a Hawaii native. A lot of Hawaii ties in this game. Kenny Amatalolo, Craig Stutzman, Timmy Chang. So should be a fun one late night after. I won't have to redo my rant that I did on Saturday. How the hell did we only have one game in the 10 o'clock Eastern window on Saturday, Adam? And unfortunately for our colleague Stormy Bonantoni, it was a absolute ass-whooping in the hands of Utah over Colorado. 43-0 at halftime. I will be honest, as big of a college football nut as I am, I ended up turning off that game and I watched Task on HBO. That was my Saturday night. I was like, I'm done. I don't need to watch any more of this. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, a couple of those paper tigers, as well as overreaction, market correction, and weekday football that Adam has handicapped. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I forgot to mention this, but continue to rate, review, and subscribe. I got a text from producer Wyatt Tomchek over the weekend. Our YouTube Thursday show had over 3,400 views, so much appreciated to all of you guys. Just a reminder, every episode is up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. iTunes, Spotify, hit us with a 5-star rating. Let's continue to build up those numbers. But Adam, it is a great day in the sports world as we record this on Monday, the 27th. It is the sports equinox, and we have some special offers over at vsin.com.
Yeah, we do. The sports equinox is, it's fun, right? You know, we get the four major North American pro leagues. We got Monday Night Football, Commanders and Chiefs, which, Speaking of LSU, would have been great if Jaden Daniels was able to play in that one. But that game lost a little bit of its luster. But still, we got game three of the World Series. We got a bunch of NBA and NHL. And yeah, $120, our sports equinox special, all access pass to everything we do at vsin.com through May 1st. So, you know, you mentioned, listening to podcasts and all that. Well, you can watch the VSiN broadcast channel with a VSiN Pro subscription. You can catch show replays. You get all the stuff that we do, which includes the college basketball betting guide. Because, Tim, I don't know if you know this or not, we're recording on Monday, as you said. The college basketball season starts next Monday. Mm-hmm. So as if we weren't busy enough with everything going on, now we're going to add college basketball to the ledger. And that college basketball betting guide, look, we talk about the transfer portal and free agency and all these things in college football. There's 365 Division I college basketball teams. There are a lot of teams that have zero returning starters. There's a lot of player movement in college basketball. So get your hands on that college basketball betting guide because it'll help you know who went where. But also, Tim, you know this as well as I do. Early in the college basketball season, it is a very soft, very inefficient market. The odds makers are more worried about football season. They get the bigger betting handles on those games. You can find some really, really excellent college basketball bets early on, midpoint of the season when people start to care, later on if you've been paying attention. So college basketball is a good market to bet into, and that college basketball betting guide will help you tremendously.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to a buddy of mine that I do a radio show with in Milwaukee, and he is the PA announcer for the Bucks. He said, well, on Friday night, we had Wisconsin against Oklahoma. I'm like, really? Apparently, that was a great game. 84-83, Oklahoma got the win. These exhibitions are going on all across America. It's actually really cool to see. So, yeah, college basketball is here, folks. And it starts in less than a week. So make sure you grab that guide. You know who could have a really good team this year? BYU, after their strong season a year ago. They got the number one recruit in the country. Football-wise, I got to give them credit. Tip of the cap to Kalani Sitake and company. Their win total, I think, crashed to 6.5 when, you know, news came out that they were losing their quarterback and, you know, we didn't know what to expect from this team. Well, they're 8-0. One of just, I think, six undefeated teams left in college football. But our buddy Parker Fleming at Stats O War puts out his "Did we really get beat that bad?" graphic. And number one on the list, Iowa State. Iowa State, by the way, had a 62.3 postgame win expectancy according to SB Plus. They were, Iowa State, -4 in the turnover margin, threw a pick six late in that game, outgained BYU 495 to 410. And I'll say this, Adam, they were up 17-7. They were driving and they throw a just crucial interception. And it felt like at that point, all right, here we go. BYU's going to get this one. So what do you make of this BYU team? Because look, they're 8-0. They got another win. They were fortunate against Arizona. They got the win, though. They win by 2 touchdowns, but man, it feels like that number very different than how that game played out. But I really think that Rocco Becht interception late in the first half, in my opinion, kind of swung the whole game towards BYU.
Yeah, I mean, this BYU team, you know, we're going to see this a lot during college basketball season of teams that just win a bunch of close games, right? And the market kind of bets against them looking for some negative regression. BYU has become that team in college football. I mean, the double overtime win against Arizona, they got outgained by more than 100 yards in the Holy War against Utah, found a way to win that game 24-21. As you mentioned, you know, last week, they gave up almost 500 yards and still find a way to win that game and score 41 points in the process. Probably should have lost to Colorado earlier in the season, a Colorado team that is really not any good. So, yeah, I mean, this BYU team, like, you know, and it's tough too because they grade really well in a lot of EPA metrics because EPA is driven pretty heavily by turnovers. They're plus 10 in turnover margin. They have 16 takeaways on the season here. So they grade well in a lot of metrics. They're winning the turnover battle more often than not. That's how you end up winning close games. But at some point you have to feel like, okay, like this is going to kind of, you know, regress to the mean a little bit. They are on a bye this week, and then they play Texas Tech in Lubbock. TCU is one of the most Jekyll and Hyde teams in the country. And then they're at Cincinnati, who they've gotten really interesting here with Brendan Sorsby, a guy that a lot of scouts really like because it's turning out not to be a great draft class from a quarterback standpoint with how guys have played this year. I think BYU loses two of the next three games. And we'll see. We'll see if they keep getting lucky. I mean, this is a team that's 5-0 in conference play with a plus 40 point differential. So, you know, I think at some point here, it's going to kind of catch up with them.
So another team, and I've tweeted about them a little bit, and I had UNC over the weekend. First time I bet on or against Chapel Bill this year. And I just thought to myself, Virginia shouldn't be laying double digits on the road against anybody, especially in the ACC. And I don't care if UNC has been a disaster. And you talk about a team, look, I'll give BYU more credit than a team like Virginia. And look, I know that Tony Elliott was on the hot seat, and he is certainly not on the hot seat anymore. And they had that great Friday night win over Florida State, a game that I bet loved the situational spot. But this team, you talk about fortune. They're now 3-0 in overtime games, and they had a postgame win expectancy of 10%. Against Louisville. They had a pick six and a scoop and score in that game against Louisville. And then over the weekend, they had 259 yards of offense, Adam, against North Carolina. And that included overtime. So this Virginia team, you know, keeps finding ways to win. Their schedule isn't daunting, but at some point, the luck's going to run out here for Virginia. They play at Cal this weekend, and then they host Wake Forest. Wake Forest, by the way, they tried. I mean, that was one of the most horrendous football games I've ever seen. Wake Forest does find a way to win on a 50-yard field goal, and they had not one, but two fumbles lost at the 5-yard line against SMU. I am glad that SMU got exposed because I thought they were fraudulent. And now you look at this conference, Adam, and the fascination about the ACC, and they would never say this, the best case scenario for the conference is for Georgia Tech and Virginia or Georgia Tech and Louisville to win out, because if Miami doesn't make the championship game, Adam, then it's a two-bid league, because Miami, barring a loss down the stretch, they've got a win over Notre Dame that continues to age well. The South Florida win obviously took a little bit of a hit this weekend with the loss to Memphis, but still a solid non-conference win. Miami's going to get in over Notre Dame because they beat them head-to-head. So best thing for the ACC, Adam, with all these weird-ass tiebreakers and these kind of phony undefeated teams, is for Miami to miss the ACC championship game. So I was trying to look at some tiebreakers. Virginia needs to lose, I think, twice in order to miss out on the ACC championship game, which at Cal, home to Wake, at Duke, home to Virginia Tech, I think it's certainly possible, but man, I can't get on board with this Virginia team. They lost to NC State, but that's a non-conference game for some odd reason.
Yeah, that was strange, the non-conference game early on in the season. Look, I wonder what price I could get. I would have to figure it out with a money line rollover and all those kinds of things. But I wonder what price I could get on Virginia losing each of their next three games.
Oh.
I think it's very, very possible, right? Long trip out to Berkeley here to take on Cal. Should have lost last week to North Carolina. By the way, North Carolina back-to-back weeks where they should have won the football game. I mean, they had the fumble in the end zone against Cal, and then, of course, the one against Virginia there.
Real quickly, I want to say this. I love that Bill Belichick went for two. I have begged teams to go for two. When you have last rebuttal in the first overtime, and you know in the second overtime, regardless, you have to go for two. I loved that UNC went for two there. Didn't love the play call. And, I mean, the wide receiver, easy for me to say, like, stretch your arms out a little bit more and you get the pile on there. But, once again, goes back to UVA. But I did want to give, I mean, for all the criticism, rightfully so, Bill Belichick has received this year, I actually love the fact that he went for two at the end of the first overtime. I feel like more teams should be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, give Jordan Hudson credit for making that call to go for two there. I think Cal beats Virginia this week. I think Wake Forest has a real shot to beat Virginia. Wake Forest is
good.
They're good.
They're Jake a Dickard's good football team.
Doing a great job with that team. And then Duke, I mean, on the road in Durham, I think that's a game that Duke should win. So I did want to bring this up here. There are three teams in the nation that have not lost a fumble this season. Miami, Texas A&M, two teams that are, you know, should make the college football playoff. And Virginia. Here's the difference between those three. Miami has fumbled twice, and they've recovered both of them. Texas A&M has fumbled four times. They've recovered all of those, which that'll probably change sometime in the near future. Virginia has fumbled nine times, and they've gotten every single one of them back.
How is that possible?
I don't know. I really, truly don't know how that's possible. But you know what? It will turn. And I think it could turn over these next three games. I think they lose at least two out of three, honestly.
I did bet Cal. I don't know if it was a spiteful bet. I don't know why I'm anti-Virginia all of a sudden. It feels like they have a horseshoe.
There's a lot of reasons to be.
They've got a horseshoe stuck up their keister here. And, you know, on the road at Berkeley, I wish it was the late night game, but it's, you know, 3:45 Eastern, 12:45 local. Maybe that works to the advantage of Cal. Cal does have, I guess, a little bit of rest advantage because they played on Friday night in Virginia, and Virginia obviously played on Saturday. But JKS, very Jekyll and Hyde, our guy Jaron Chiave Sangapulateli. But anytime we can back Justin Wilcox, especially as a home dog, I will be up for it. By the way, I know the utilization of ball don't lie gets used way too much, but I did kind of feel like justice was served, Virginia Tech winning and covering against Cal after that just horrendous roughing the passer call on Friday night. That was god-awful, and that gave Cal an opportunity to score a touchdown and force overtime.
Yeah, I agree. Ball don't lie is overused, but sometimes, you know, like I... you think back to, and the biggest ball don't lie ever was the Outback Bowl between Michigan and South Carolina, where Jadeveon Clowney just blew up the running back after the measurement was clearly short. Like, no doubt about it, short. And then Clowney just blows up the running back and palms the football. The good days of South Carolina football.
All right, before we look ahead to some weekday games, I did want to do a little market correction or overreaction here. I did want to point this out. So I looked up the South Point Game of the Year lines that Chris Andrews puts up, usually in like mid to early August, I think. And Penn State was a 3.5-point dog at Ohio State. That is now 20.5. So we've talk about a movement there. We've almost moved 3 full touchdowns in that game. And look, you know this Ohio State team as well as anybody. I don't know how Penn State's going to have too much success scoring. I'm not interested in laying 20.5, but I think that's probably a market correction. I don't think it's an overreaction to have a almost 3 touchdown line in that game.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the situation with James Franklin, but then Drew Aller being out. I have an 18.5, so I guess I'm a little bit lighter than the market. I'm not really interested in taking Penn State. Ohio State's been interesting to me because, like, we talked about this last week on the show in terms of Julian Sayin and his Heisman candidacy. Like, they weren't giving this kid a lot to do. They weren't giving this kid a lot to do. And then all of a sudden in the game against Wisconsin, he's 36 of 42 passing. I think Ohio State's kind of realizing that their running game is not particularly good this season. You know, all the running backs that they have, Bo Jackson's probably been the best one. And some of his bigger plays have been in garbage time in the second half of the games against Grambling and Ohio from earlier on in the season. So this is what, like, I normally wouldn't want to take Ohio State in a game like this to run it up. But, like, if they're going to throw the football all over the place, then maybe they have the chance to do that, because I just don't think that they really trust their running game a whole lot. I will say one thing that pisses me off is that Penn State's interested in Brian Hartline. I get it. I understand it. But leave Hartline alone. You already got Jim Knowles and it hasn't worked. So be happy with that.
Stop stealing our coaches. All right. You said running it up, so I'll bring it up. Indiana, man, I'm mad at myself. I don't lay big numbers, and I should have, because when I heard Kurt Cignetti do his spiel at his press conference talking about how UCLA was 3-0 and how good of the team they were, I was like, oh, this is going to be ugly. And sure enough, it was 56-6. They now have 2 50-plus point wins in the Big Ten this year. So Indiana goes on the road to Maryland. This number was 17.5 in the look ahead. It's now 21.5. Is this a market correction or an overreaction to Indiana winning by a million over UCLA?
I mean, do you want to step in front of this team?
No.
I have no interest in stepping in front of this team. I also think that, you know, we kind of talked about last week about the Heisman Trophy and like how it's kind of hard to find a lot of guys that stand out. Like, is Kurt Cignetti looking at this thing and going, you know, Fernando Mendoza could win this?
Sure.
Like, is he looking at this and saying, you know what? I'm going to let this kid go out there and run. Like, 73% completion rate, only been sacked 6 times. Indiana's plus 23 in sack differential this year. 24-3 touchdown interception ratio. Like, there's, when you're a program like Indiana, and obviously they're on a rapid ascent at this point in time. But when you're a program like Indiana, like, I would have never expected Fernando Mendoza to come in there and play as well as he has. Like, if you can win a quarterback, a Heisman, and then all of a sudden, like, you kind of get to sort of name your successor for these, you know, 1 or 2 year guys that you get out of the portal, that is tremendously valuable. So I think if they have the chance to get Mendoza up around 40 touchdown passes or something like that, you know, over the 4 games here and then the Big Ten championship game, like, why not, right? Go ahead and run it up. So I think, and they have teams they can run it up against the rest of the way too. I am not betting against them. I can't do it.
So I was a little surprised to see the selection of where College Game Day is headed this week. I imagine they were getting some shit for SEC, SEC, SEC in a row there for College Game Day. So they're going to Salt Lake City. Now, it is an ESPN broadcast, so it makes a little bit more sense. Utah wins 53-7. Mentioned this already. We're up 43-0 at halftime. Outgained Colorado 587-140. We had, stop me if you heard this before, Kyle Whittingham playing coy with his quarterback, and ultimately it wasn't Devin Dampier, which kind of seemed to be the way it was trending. But then on the injury report on Friday, he was listed as probable. Bird Ficklin comes in, and he was really good. Ran all over Colorado. This number, is it an overreaction to this win, or is it a market correction? Utah's laying a 7.5 against Cincinnati, and you already alluded to this Cincinnati team. You know, Cincinnati is a bad throw against Nebraska away from being undefeated heading into this game. I don't think enough people are talking about them, but sometimes, Adam, the market kind of tells you what's going on here. This is a big number for Utah to be laying at home against Cincinnati.
It is a big number. At the same time, this is a big-time measuring stick game for Cincinnati. I mean, if you look at Jeff Sagarin, Cincinnati's 73rd in the nation in strength of schedule against. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, great story. It's really cool to see Cincinnati thriving at football again like they did under Luke Fickell, because that Cincinnati area has got a wealth of talent at the high school level. And, you know, Ohio's probably the fifth best state for high school football. You're behind Texas, California, Florida, I guess maybe fourth best. So there's a lot of talent to go around there. At the same time, like Baylor, I don't know what the hell is going on at Baylor. Speaking of jobs, they're going to be open. I don't think Dave Aranda can save it this time.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State, train wreck. UCF, Scott Frost's first year is not going well. The Iowa State win, Iowa State's been all over the map this season. The non-conference was pretty weak for Cincinnati. This is a pretty big step up in class here, I think, for the Bearcats. So I get it. Again, we don't know if it'll be Dampier or Bird Ficklin, who has an elite college football name, by the way.
Does it matter?
It's a little, no, probably not. I think it's maybe a little bit overreactionary, but again, show it to me, Cincinnati.
Yep.
Show it to me in a road game against a really good team where, you know, you have a 73rd ranked strength of schedule.
Well, and also you think about the Utah-Texas Tech game, and I'm not saying the reason Utah didn't win that game was because it was at 10 a.m. local, but this game's a night game, right? Night game, Rice-Eccles, just a little bit different juice there. I always tweet out the overreaction market correction lines. I put out the look-ahead lines that DraftKings puts out there, and then on Monday I put out where the market is. I got a tweet from Duff. Cincy line is shocking. Utah isn't that good, in my opinion, but that tells me Utes big. So, yeah, the market is kind of telling us that Utah probably the right side there, but we'll see how that game ultimately plays out. One more I wanted to throw your...
Let me throw this out real quickly here. I'm looking at CFB Graph's website. From an EPA per play standpoint, Cincinnati is 71st in the country on defense. Oof. So that's what I'm kind of interested to see here. I think Brendan Sorsby is good. I think the offense is good. I mean, they're a top 20 EPA per play offense, according to CFB Graphs. But defensively, they are well behind where Utah is. So that's what I want to know, right? How does your defense stack up? Because, you know, whether it's Ficklin or it's Dampier, they're both dual threat guys. So you got to worry about the pass and the run. Whittingham's teams are always solid in the trenches. Like, this may be kind of that quote-unquote come-to-Jesus moment for Cincinnati's defense. And if that's the case, then this number is not only accurate, but probably something Utah can cover.
By the way, as we've been talking, the Virginia-Cal line has come down, Adam. So someone has piped into our recording of the podcast.
Someone hacked in. Wyatt Tomchak's got to improve the security measures there for this pod.
Wyatt Tomchak is max betting right now the Virginia-Cal line as that number has come down to 4. Yeah, but I bet Cal. That was the first bet. I was, once again, UNC, I won the bet with UNC. I was just mad that Virginia won the game, and that there's an outside shot that they can make the playoff. So Yeah, I will be on JKS here in this spot against UVA. One more game I wanted to mention that we saw a little bit of line move here from last week to now. Night game in Lincoln, and Lincoln Riley will be laying a touchdown against Nebraska. USC was 4.5 last week. They're now a 7-point favorite. FanDuel has 6.5 juiced. I can't trust USC in this spot, but man, I'll tell you what. I've got an under 7.5 ticket on Nebraska, or excuse me, over 7.5 ticket on Nebraska. They're 6-2 at them. I don't trust that team as far as I can throw them. I do not like them. And while I love home dogs, I don't think I could get there on Nebraska in this spot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. You know, I mean, USC is an interesting team because their run defense is bad. Their run defense is really bad, but they're good against the pass. And, you know, the thing that pops up all the time, you know, for USC here, we've talked about this extensively on the show. I know Jonathan Von Tobel talked about this coming into the season. Jaden Maiava puts the ball at risk.
Mm-hmm.
He just does. And in his last three games, he's thrown 4 interceptions. If you want to cover a touchdown on the road, you damn well better take care of the football. I don't know that Jaden Maiava is going to be able to do that. I have it 6.5, so I'm in line with the market. But, I mean, I it's crazy this to say. I would lean Nebraska. But, again, I mean, I texted you, like, that Matt Rhule year 3 bump is not happening in Lincoln. So, I'm curious what his job prospects look like with so many jobs available. Like, do teams come calling? Or is he just going to kind of be stuck there at Nebraska again?
Well, look at their schedule right now, and ironically enough, they do play Penn State on November 22nd. Is that going to be a job interview, or is that going to be, nah, I don't want this guy situation? So 4 games left. I need 2 wins from Nebraska, and I'll be honest, man, I'm looking at the schedule, USC at UCLA, at Penn State, and then apparently the juggernaut that is Iowa to close out the season. So we'll see if they can get over their win total of 7.5. I don't feel great about Big Red, but at least they got the win against Northwestern. That was not a pretty game whatsoever. Adam, let's hit some weekday games. And Tuesday night, we get a Sun Belt game. I'm kind of excited about this one. James Madison, the last time we saw them, they were absolutely curb stomping Old Dominion in what was a de facto play-in game to the Sun Belt Championship. I don't know if this classifies as a letdown because the game was over a week ago, but you mentioned it off air. Doesn't this just kind of feel like a G.J. Kinney type of going to keep things entertaining here in this spot as a 6.5-point home dog?
Well, so as we're recording here, the under is getting smoked in this game. And this is my soapbox, you know, thing that I'm going to talk about on every episode going forward. It's almost November, right? Weather is going to be a factor. 35-mile-per-hour wind gusts on Tuesday night for this game. So then the question kind of becomes, okay, well, is Texas State going to be able to do what they want to do offensively? You know, when you get the weather, it kind of limits what you're able to do. Do they want to throw the football? Is this a team that, you know, is able to run the football? When you look at rush rate over expectation for this team, though, it's actually pretty high this season, more so than you would think. So maybe Kenny just doesn't have a whole lot of trust in his quarterbacks, but this is a situation where you're going to be running into the teeth of a James Madison defense that's 8th in the nation in rush EPA per play. So I understand why this under is coming through. And this is one why, yeah, weather matters from a total standpoint, but I also think weather matters a lot from a spread standpoint too. If it's going to be hard for Texas State to throw the football, it now becomes a lot harder for them to win because James Madison just stacks up so well against the run. So had I not seen that, I would have said, yeah, you know, this is probably the type of game where G.J. Kinney's team does show up on a Tuesday night in San Marcos, but now with the wind maybe dictating the game plan a little bit, that plays into JMU's strength on defense. So I would have said yes, but then, you know, this is why you have to factor in all these different things. Now I just don't like what the weather conditions could do to Texas State's game plan. So it completely shifts my thought process on the handicap.
Speaking of weather, next week, boys and girls, the start of Maction, and you can always anticipate crappy weather in the Midwest on a Tuesday night. Looking forward to that. But we get one more week of anyone want to win this conference. That would be the CUSA. Your current betting favorite to win Conference USA, the Owls of Kennesaw State. And I know there were some juicy numbers out there. You know this conference a lot better than I do. We've got UTEP at Kennesaw State on Tuesday, Jacksonville State at Murfreesboro, Middle Tennessee State, and then FIU against Missouri State. The floor is yours, sir. Anything in the Sun Belt midweek that jumps out to you?
I can't wait for Conference USA.
CUSA, I'm sorry, Wednesday. I said Sun Belt. CUSA.
I can't wait for this to be over because... God, it's, I mean, the MAC is horrific this season. So the quality of play is not going to get any better. I can't wait for this to be over. I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago I played dogs and it came through. Last week I played some favorites. It didn't come through. Like when you've got a bunch of bad teams like this, it's just kind of, do they execute that week? Yes or no. And if the answer is no, your bet is dead. And if the answer is yes, then you're in pretty good shape. But I will say this. I do have Kennesaw State a 12-point favorite in this game. And I've been very impressed with Jerry Mack and what he's done with this team. Remember last year, Kennesaw State, I mean, not only were they very bad from a wins and losses standpoint, but Brian Bohannon, who, you know, kind of stewarded this transition from FCS to FBS, you know, he gets fired. I mean, they beat Liberty as, what, a 28.5-point dog or 26.5, whatever it was. He gets fired. Nobody really wants to play the rest of the way. Mass exodus in the transfer portal. This team has been shockingly good this season. I give them all the credit in the world. UTEP has not been good. And UTEP is a team, you know, they went kind of outside the box. They hired Scotty Walden from Austin Peay. They wanted a young up-and-coming coach. I think he was like 29 when they hired him, something like that. This team has shown virtually no improvement year over year. Yeah, they beat Sam Houston State. Sam Houston State's the worst power-rated team in the nation. Outside of UMass for a lot of people. So I like Kennesaw State here laying the 12, but it's hard to, or laying 10, I should say, because I have it 12. 9.5 can be found at FanDuel as we're recording. That's definitely better than 10, but it's always tough when you're in a conference where the total is 50.5 and like none of these teams are efficient in any way, shape, or form. So I do lean Kennesaw State in that game. And then the two games on Wednesday night, good Lord. FIU looked so good against Western Kentucky 2 weeks ago. And then I backed them again last week. And I was better off setting my money on fire in that one. Missouri State's got Jacob Clark back. He's their starting quarterback. Played really well last week, actually, in their game. My numbers tell me to bet FIU. I may tell my numbers to go to hell and just, like, I don't know, keep prepping for college basketball or something on Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, a couple games just a little bit later in the week of more interest. A couple of American games I wanted to get your thoughts on. Thursday night, Tulane and UTSA. I briefly mentioned it, Adam, with Memphis's win over South Florida, it throws another wrinkle into who's going to get the G5 bid to the college football playoff. Right now, the favorite is Tulane, who is playing on Thursday night. They haven't really played anybody of note, or at least beat anybody of note. I guess beating Duke, I got to give them credit for that. But in the conference so far, they've played Tulsa, ECU, and Army. They go to San Antonio. It could be maybe a little bit of a look-ahead spot because the following week, it's a primetime game against Memphis on ESPN. So this kind of shapes up to be a weird spot here for Jeff Traylor to throw a massive wrench into the American as they kind of continue to cannibalize themselves in that conference.
Yeah, this is tough because UTSA was a team I really, really liked coming into the season. You know, they were bringing their quarterback back and there was a lot of quarterback turnover in the American conference here coming into this season. Memphis, you know, losing Seth Hennigan, who played there for like 18 years. You had Tulane with a new quarterback and with Jake Bretzlaff coming in very late in the process. I thought that was going to be tricky for them. South Florida with Byron Brown, like, you know, coming back. I mean, is he going to stay healthy? That's always the question with him. Navy, Blake Horvath. I talked about him being one of the top 10 returning quarterbacks in the country. Awesome. He's been great. But I feel like UTSA with Owen McCown back, with a lot of their talent, a lot of their production back, at least, you know, the defensive side of the ball. I thought they'd be better than what they are. But I mean, this is a team. I bet them at Colorado State. I don't know how they didn't cover that game, especially seeing how Colorado State's done here lately. They lost on the road at Temple. And by the way, Casey Keeler might be the coach of the year.
He's been doing, yeah.
With Temple, I mean, they're going to be bowl eligible, which is outrageous to think about. They crushed Rice, just completely decimated Rice. A Rice team who, by the way, beat UConn last week, which was one of the shocking results. And then North Texas beats them 55-17. So UTSA goes from a 61-13 win over Rice to losing by 38 to North Texas. And like, I don't know what you're going to get out of this team, but my number is Tulane minus 5.5. And Tulane with some new life now for that group of five bit berth, where Memphis, Brendan Lewis is hurt, man. I mean, he gutted it out in that game against South Florida, but he's hurt. And I don't know if he can keep doing that week after week. So I like Tulane in this game. I think John Sumrall is one hell of a coach, and we're going to find that out with whatever job he gets coming up here this offseason, or I guess probably in December. But I like Tulane, man. I think Jake Retzlaff, with his running ability, Tulane's so much different of an offense this season than they were last year. And that speaks to Sumrall and how good him and his coaching staff are. I like them laying the 3.5 here. It looks like a fishy game, trappy type of game. I think they take care of business. I really do.
Well, you mentioned, and I'll probably bring this up as a sandwich spot. Now, the caveat is maybe they already had their clunker, losing as a 23.5 point favorite. But Memphis, talk about a spot, man. You beat South Florida. You're back in it. Next week, it's been announced, as I mentioned, primetime ESPN. You're playing Tulane. And this week, you got to go face that funky-ass offense that Rice institutes. Look, Rice only lost to Navy by 8. However, they also lost to UTSA by like 37,000. So this is a be careful spot for Memphis on the road, laying 14.5. But my worry and hesitation would be, have they already had their clunker? Because this is a primo letdown spot on a short week to go face a weird ass offense in Rice.
Yeah, this one's really, really strange. And look, you know, I mean, you also run into a situation here with Ryan Silverfield where, again, playing that funky offense, a very, very run-heavy offense, kind of a modified option type of thing. That's not what you want to face because your linemen are getting cut blocked and yeah, they're going to be on the field potentially for long, sustained drives, stuff like that. And your quarterback's hurt too. So this is not an ideal spot for Memphis at all whatsoever. And I don't think Rice is a very good football team. They could be bowl eligible. If they beat UAB, they have a shot against North Texas and South Florida, although it's a long shot at best. I give them credit, man. We talked about this coming into the season. Like, if you're not a very good football team, why the hell not try an option?
Yeah.
Why not just do something different, right? I mean, Georgia Tech won 8, 9, 10 games every year with Paul Johnson. They didn't have the most talent, but they just ran a different scheme that nobody wanted to play against week in and week out. So this is a really tough game. And also the thing for Rice, if they're finding success running the football, they can really condense this game.
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't know how explosive Memphis is going to be because Brendan Lewis can't really run right now. I like the under in this game. So kind of by proxy, I like Rice plus the 14.5.
Yeah, I took 15.5 on Sunday. Still would play it, obviously, at 14.5. I think FanDuel still has 14.5. You know, this is a hold-on-to-your-butt special, but, you know, you got a Rice team that, like you said, they've got a weird offense, ran for 300 yards, kind of glorified triple option type of deal. So that was an impressive result that they beat UConn over the weekend. So there you go, a couple of weekday games. I also don't know how Syracuse can be laying points against anybody in the ACC, so just yep. Point that out.
I agree with that one too.
Yeah, so I mean, I might have to back UNC in 2 straight weeks. I don't, that Syracuse team, I bet them 2 weeks ago against Pitt. That is a bad football team right now. Mm-hmm. I think Fran Brown's a good coach. I just think, you know, he lost a lot a year ago. Obviously, you lose Steve Angeli. They don't know what's going on at the quarterback position. They are coming off a bye, so they have the advantage there, but I don't know how you're laying points against UNC.
No, I don't know either. All right, I got a game for you on Saturday.
Okay.
Army and Air Force.
Over.
So, I mean, this is a pick'em, or, you know, I think it's interesting because a lot of the shops in Vegas, or a lot of the shops with Vegas ties, have this one a pick'em. And DraftKings and FanDuel, with far and away the biggest market shares of the sports books that aren't prediction markets, they have it 1.5 here with Army a road favorite. Now, Army, this is fascinating because I saw this stat in the context of Drew Mestemaker last week for North Texas, who threw for 600 yards. Army has thrown for 599 yards this season. And Liam Zarka, who I don't know what the hell happened last week against Wyoming. I don't know if the weather was bad in Colorado Springs or what. He was 3 of 8 for 33 yards. Like, that's more of what you're used to seeing from an Air Force quarterback. But prior to that, 246 against Boise, 278 against Hawaii, 212 against Navy. Like, Air Force can actually throw the football. Army clearly cannot. This line is a head scratcher for me. I'm not saying that Air Force should be, like, you know, significantly favored, and I personally do have it pick 'em. But, like, I don't know, Air Force can actually throw the football in an option matchup. Like, to me, that's a big advantage.
I'm looking it up right now because I was curious what their, you know, different strength of schedules is. Actually, Army has played technically a more challenging schedule this year. Man, I kind of like Air Force here. I haven't bet it, probably over. And I know historically Armed Force unders obviously are the cash cow. I think like the last 20 years, aren't they hitting it like 80% or something like that? But Navy Air Force was a lot of fun to watch. And one of the more electric games of the college football season, I'm being honest, was that Air Force UNLV game where you had 1,200 yards of offense. Granted, it was inside and weather could be a factor on Saturday in Colorado Springs. I haven't looked at the forecast yet, but yeah.
Well, don't worry, I'm on it. I'm looking right now.
I kind of like this. I like this Air Force team offensively. They're just horrific defensively. I mean, horrific. But did they find something in that game against Wyoming? I don't know. But both teams coming off byes, there'll probably be some unique wrinkles. Obviously, Air Force cannot win the Commander-in-Chief's trophy this year, losing to Navy. And Navy, at worst, will retain the trophy. But Army still has a chance if they win this game for it to be on the line for Army-Navy. But I kind of like Air Force here in this spot.
66 and sunny.
Woo!
Perfect day.
Dang.
Perfect day there in Colorado Springs. But yeah, I think you made an excellent point about the total here because, you know, again, a lot of times, like, I'm looking to pick off some lines with my power ratings early in the week, but I'm also looking for context clues to see what kind of might happen going forward. How many times do we see a Service Academy game get drilled to the under right away?
Oh, yeah.
Not this week. In fact, this one's kind of gone up a little bit at some places. So that speaks to exactly what you're saying about this game where, I mean, Army can't throw it. They can't throw it at all. And yet this total's still kind of inching up a little bit with Air Force just being worst or second worst in the nation in yards per play allowed on defense. So yeah, this is one again, the context clues kind of tell you the story, at least from a total standpoint in this one.
Blake Horvath threw for 339 yards against Air Force.
I mean, God, their defense is
Eli Heidenreich had 243 yards receiving against Air Force this year in the Navy Air Force game, but
it's unbelievable.
I'll be watching it in that noon window on Saturday, CBS. Looking forward to that. All right. Parting words, parting gifts here, Mr. Burke.
No, just, I mean, I think there's a lot of hard to gauge games this weekend. I mean, like Georgia, Florida, the cocktail party in Jacksonville, like what does Florida look like with interim head coach Billy Gonzalez? Now that Sunbelt Billy Napier was let go. Mississippi State and Arkansas is a fascinating game. Both teams collapsing last week. You know, that's an interesting one for sure. And also, I just want to mention this before we sign off here. So West Virginia, Scotty Fox played really well last week against TCU. Houston's a 14.5 point favorite, and I love what Willie Fritz is doing.
Letdown.
With that team. It could be a letdown spot here, you know, off the win over Arizona State. I also kind of like the over in that game with Fox playing really well. But, man, there have been some great coaching jobs this season, Keeler among them at Temple. But Willie Fritz just very, very quietly has this Houston program playing better than they have in a long time?
My parting word will be this. As soon as I saw Toledo flip to the favorite against Washington State, I should have immediately bet Washington State. Jason Candle just stinks as a favorite. And they were an underdog. And then you saw that old flip to favorite situation. But another loss for Toledo in the favorite role. He has lost 18 games as a favorite since 2021. That is pretty staggering to look at. I'm looking at the most. I think he is the most losses as a favorite. So they are 35 and 18 straight up. I think 23 and 30 against the spread. And one of the weird spots of the weekend was Toledo going to Washington State. Seemed like a very sharp side until they kicked it off. And Toledo, typically in Jason Candle fashion, lost as a favorite to Washington State.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest overlays of the week was Toledo. And then I realized I don't know how to power rate MAC teams anymore. Because, good Lord. I swear to God, like, I hope we just get nothing but bad weather games for the MAC games to make them watchable and interesting. Because this conference is just so beyond terrible.
On that note, a week away from MACtion. We will talk some action next week, but that's going to do it
full as always
for this podcast. That's Adam Burke. I'm Tim Murray. We'll be back on Wednesday. Wednesday is with Wes Reynolds, as well as Brett Ciancia. And then the Thursday breakdown of the card with Matt Humans. As always, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek. Thanks to Ryan Hunter. Thanks to Adam. As always, I'm Tim Murray. We're back later this week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.